The Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man. And for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is April 14th, 2008. And boy, is April 14th a big day. So first of all, tomorrow's tax day. I actually don't have my taxes in yet, but we will get them done. They're mostly done. They're in TurboTax. I've been using TurboTax for about 8 years. Yeah, maybe closer to 10. And I've been filing electronically for several years. So that'll get done, later tonight, probably. Also, April 14th is a significant day in history for a couple of reasons. And the biggest reason, for those of you who are American history buffs, today is the day of a famous assassination. And that, if you didn't remember, should tell you everything you need to know. It was April 14th, 1865, that Abraham Lincoln was shot by John Wilkes Booth. Do you remember where he was shot? Yes, the back of the head. No, that's not what I meant. He was shot at Ford's Theater right here in Washington, D.C. And do you remember the name of the play that he was watching? Probably not. This is maybe too esoteric for most of my listeners. He was watching a play called Our American Cousin. And do you remember what John Wilkes Booth shouted as he jumped from the box to the stage and made his escape? Why you don't go out the back way, I don't know. There might have been a guard out there and he might have snuck in. But he jumped on the stage, and I guess he broke his leg because they found him the next day in a barn that I think they set on fire, and he died in the fire. But he yelled, and I may not have this right, but it was sic semper tyrannis, I think, which was never sic a Tyrannosaurus Rex on yourself. No, it was thus always to tyrants, is the translation from the Latin. And I may not have the Latin exactly right. And for those of you who think I'm reading from a sheet, I hate to tell you what a history wonk I am, but all I've got in front of me here is that it's the day that he was assassinated, and I remember all the rest of the details from studying this over the years. The other little detail is he didn't die on April 14th. Lincoln died the next day, April 15th. In fact, he died at 7:22 in the morning. And they argued for years, and I've not usually found this to be true, but I've known since I was a child, that if you go into a clock store, a store that has clocks, a jewelry store, or jeweler in those days, the clocks supposedly were all set for 7:22. Now, I think that's going back to the early 20th century, the late 19th century, as out of respect to Lincoln. And the other principle is that you want to set a clock for a pleasant hour, and I don't mean the death of someone, I mean a symmetrical hour. So today you often see a clock set for 10 after 10, which separates the two hands, but not doesn't put them directly across from each other as quarter of three would be, or 9:15 would. Whereas 7:22 is kind of the opposite. It's the opposite of 10 after 10. It's the hands facing down, but again, they're separated a pleasing distance. So the argument was when I was a kid that clocks in stores were always set to 7:22. I didn't find that to be true when I was a kid. It certainly isn't true today, but I've always remembered that Abraham Lincoln died at 7:22 a.m. on April 15th. So that's tomorrow morning, and tomorrow morning is also tax day. It's also the day in 1912 that the Titanic hit its iceberg, and it took time for it to sink, so I guess it probably sank the next day, the 15th. But that's worth remembering, too, now that James Cameron has reminded us all of that. So let's go on, as we often do, to a few things in the world of miscellaneous news, shall we say. And the world of miscellaneous news takes us to, let's see, well, let's talk about the Olympic torch for a moment. So if you were paying any attention to the news in the U.S., you know that there have been protests around the Olympic torch. Of course, when the Olympic torch makes its rounds, it's supposed to be a glorious opportunity to go out and see this flame that was carried all the way from Mount Olympus in Greece to the site of the Olympics. So they have to put it on a plane at times, but it's going to all six of the seven continents. I don't believe it's going to Antarctica. But it stopped in Europe, and when it went through Paris, there were big protests. Then it came to San Francisco. It also stopped in South America, but then it came to San Francisco, and there were huge protests last week. But they rerouted the thing. They had a lot of protesters out, and so the police or somebody rerouted it. But anyway, China's not getting the buzz out of it that they wanted, because what's happening is they're getting all this bad press about the protests. And it turns out that there is this, the Chinese have a what they call a sacred flame protection unit that apparently is using pretty rough tactics to keep people away from the torch. But I have to say that this call to boycott the Olympics is a bit overblown, and let's talk about why for a minute. I'm going to get serious for a minute before we get back to the lighter news of the week. I don't think it makes sense to boycott the Olympics. I don't think it makes sense to even ask the president, President Bush, to boycott the opening ceremonies. He's going to fly over there and only go to, you know, the pole vaulting competition or the closing ceremonies and not the opening. I just don't see much mileage in all that. It is true the Chinese want the Olympics, desperately want it to raise their stature among the world of nations and all of that. But their repression in Tibet, I mean, they consider Tibet separatists. And it is true that they conquered that area of the world in the 50s or whenever and annexed it. But, you know, that's been going on in that part of the world for a long time. And it's hard to say who belongs to what area of land belongs to who. If you want to have influence on the Chinese, though, one of the things we know about the Chinese, but also just about Asian Oriental cultures in general, you don't get your way by publicly castigating them or humiliating them. And so a public gesture by Bush, as Angela Merkel is doing, as I think the French president may be doing, skipping the opening ceremonies. I think Merkel may not be going at all. I don't think it serves much purpose. Now, I don't know why the president is going to the Olympics anyways. In general, I don't remember presidents going to Olympic Games. But this guy's a sports fan. He probably thought, when am I going to get a better shot at getting any seat I want to any Olympic event I want? This is so cool being president. So he's going to end his, you know, his 8 years and go out in his last year with these boondoggle kinds of things. So he's going over to see the Olympics. But it would be a mistake to boycott them, I think. I don't think that China, what they've done with Tibet is to be condemned, but let's keep things in perspective here. They've arrested people. They've killed several hundred people over the last, I don't know if it's 10, 20 years, over this issue in Tibet. And it is true that they are trying to change the culture, and they are they built a train line, and they are moving in thousands, hundreds of thousands, perhaps, of Chinese to dilute the Tibetan culture in that region west of China. But let's go back to what the Soviets, the Russians did under first Yeltsin and then Putin. They have killed more than 75,000 Chechens that they call separatists. They call terrorists, but they were separatists. And they've leveled cities there. And we continue to do business with them. And we don't publicly castigate them over that. We say we talk privately to them about that. We have a much better chance of influencing the Chinese to negotiate with the Dalai Lama and come up with some kind of a system that would preserve Tibetan culture, give them some autonomy, but not give them freedom. And the Dalai Lama has said repeatedly he's not looking for freedom from China. He's looking for autonomy and particularly cultural autonomy, preserve the Tibetan culture. That is a deal that might be struck, because he's a pretty reasonable guy if you could talk the Chinese into negotiating with him. So we'll see what may come of that, but I'm not too concerned about this whole issue of, you know, how we end up with whether or not we end up boycotting China. In any case, the Andy Finn Show will be right back.
I've often thought that if our brains got physically larger the more we exercised them, that instead of going to the gym to pump iron, people would go to the library to pump ideas in order to impress the opposite sex.
Look at the brain on that stud.
Have you ever seen a brain that big?
Look at that guy. He's huge.
I gotta start working out my head.
Wow. I'd like to wake up next to that brain every morning.
So tune in the Andy Finn Show and grow your brain. It's the only one you've got.
Listen to the Andy Finn Show at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and let's see. We got a bunch of things happening as we get to the rest of the week. There was an interesting article in the Washington Post yesterday that frankly, didn't surprise me. It was a lengthy article about how now that food costs are going up, restaurants are making for smaller portions. Rather than raise the price of their entrees, they make smaller portions. So they get rid of a 12-ounce steak and give you an 8-ounce steak, but make it look like more by putting other stuff on the plate. Hey, I got news for you. That doesn't strike me much as news. If you paid any attention in the grocery store, that's what they do. I noticed it first with candy bars when I was a younger man, or maybe even a child, when they didn't want to raise the price of a nickel candy bar to a dime. It doesn't make sense to have a 6-cent candy bar. We're talking, telling you how old I am, folks. They just made the candy bar smaller. And then when they finally jumped to a dime, they either kept them the same size or they made them a little bit larger because they doubled the price. And they said, new, larger bars, but they were 10 cents then. And it went that way all the way through till they're now, you know, 90 cents at a machine or a buck or 65 cents at the grocery store or Walgreens or whatever place has convenient, whatever store, convenience store has candy sitting out. And it works the same with most food products. I was just picking up sliced almonds, which I love to put on my salads, and I was looking at the bag of them, and they're the same price roughly as they were before, but I looked at them and I thought, you know, this bag is smaller, and I don't have one of the old bags to tell how many ounces smaller they made it, but rather than raise the price, they made a smaller bag of almonds, and that's how they raise prices. So it shouldn't surprise us that grocery stores are doing that, but I guess it merits an article. And let's see. Well, let's talk about a few issues in the world of protests. So we know that the Pope is coming in for a visit. He arrives here on Tuesday, and he'll be greeted at Andrews Air Force Base. You know, most of us cannot land at Andrews, but military people and the Pope. And then he's going to meet at the White House on Wednesday. The interesting thing about the dinner the White House is having later in the week is that they're holding a dinner in honor of the Pope, and the Pope is not going to be there, which I think is hilarious, but that's the way it works. I guess he doesn't do dinner. Maybe he's a vegetarian. I just don't know. But the Washington Post had a detailed article yesterday on how the papal visit will affect people's commute, because those of you that don't live in Washington don't have to deal with this, but we have to deal with it all the time. Anytime there's visiting dignitaries, and they don't get much bigger than the Pope, you've got traffic tie-ups as they clear traffic. There'll be processions in the Pope-mobile. They fly his Pope-mobile in, so he's in bulletproof glass, but he sits up so people can see him. And that Pope-mobile, I mean, if I wanted to go downtown on Wednesday, I could catch a procession as he goes from essentially the White House to, well, it's really at Dick Cheney's place, but he's staying at the Naval Observatory near Dick Cheney's place in what they're calling the Papal Residence. I don't know if that's a permanent. It can't be. It's where he's going. I guess if he stays there, they call it the Papal Residence. But you don't want to go anywhere near these areas of D.C. at the time. He'll also be over at the National Cathedral on Thursday, I guess it is, and at Catholic U. So it's going to be crowded. But the last time the Pope was in New York, and this was the previous Pope, of course, there was an interesting incident that it didn't make the news much, and I don't know if you heard about this one, but Pope John Paul II arrived, and when they got the Pope-mobile out of the airplane and all set up on the tarmac, and he was there with his driver, he had a conversation with his usual driver, and he said, you know, I have never had a chance to drive this thing, and I haven't been able to drive a car in the last 20 years. I'm so tired of riding in the back, I'd like to drive the Pope-mobile into Manhattan. And the driver was like, Your Holiness, I don't know. I'm supposed to drive you. And he said, oh, come on. What harm can be done? The driver thinks, well, this is the Pope. I guess I'll have to let him drive. So he lets him drive. I'm wrong about this. It wasn't the Pope-mobile because that's safe for processions. It was just the Pope's limo. And he's got a big, you know, black stretch limo with tinted windows. But he still wants to drive. And so the driver lets the Pope drive, and it turns out His Holiness has a heavy foot. And so the Pope ends up speeding. He's doing about 95 miles an hour on the Long Island Expressway going into Manhattan. And he gets pulled over by New York's finest. And when the cop realizes that he doesn't just have any stretch limo, that the Pope is driving it, he thinks, oh, I'm in trouble now. So he calls back to headquarters on his portable, and he says, give me the chief. I need to talk to the captain of police. They put him through to the captain. And he says, Captain, I got a problem here. I have a big dignitary, a celebrity, and I'm not sure what to do. Should I let him out of a speeding ticket? Well, who is it? Is it the mayor? More important than the mayor? Is it the governor? More important than the governor? Is it the president? You can't stop the president. No, he's in a limo. It's not the president, but he's more important. More important? Who's more important than the president? And the cop says, I don't know, but he's got the Pope for his limo driver. Okay. So, that's a little humor for you, but in addition to the Pope's visit, an interesting thing happened this past weekend. The IMF and the World Bank held their meetings today. In fact, the annual meeting ended yesterday on Sunday. And they're held in the same place they always are. The IMF and the World Bank are basically on between G and H Street, right near 19th Street. And the interesting thing about it is I didn't hear a darn thing about anything resembling protests. If you remember, if you go back 8 or 9 years up in Seattle, I think it was about 99, there were huge protests at the World Bank meetings. And there were agitators, and there were cars set on fire, and there was unrest. And this happened in other countries as well. The IMF and the World Bank were a flashpoint for everything that was wrong with the way Western financial powers were approaching the third world, et cetera, et cetera. Now, regardless of what you thought about all of that, what's interesting is that September 11th put an end to all that. Since September 11th, the only protest I've ever seen over the IMF or World Bank meetings in this country, and I think it's true in other countries as well, have been pretty muted. People's priorities changed after 9/11, and they didn't see that as so important. So I don't know what else to say about it, except I just think that's interesting. Speaking of protests, I don't know if this falls under the area of protest, but you may have heard about this polygamous sect in Texas. The authorities raided a compound. This what's the guy's name who was convicted of child molestation? I think it was. This was in either Arizona or New Mexico. But basically, this sect, which is a broke off from the Mormons religion when Mormons outlawed polygamy, and I guess that would have been about, I forget what year it was, I don't want to guess here. When they did that, this sect, the guy's last name is Jeffs, I believe, he became the leader of this polygamous sect. And they've been working with the authorities in Arizona and New Mexico, keep some tabs on these folks, and they've agreed to avoid marrying young underage women to these older guys for multiple wives. But in Texas, they opened this compound in Texas, which was for the holiest of the holy people and the best of the best, and they support it with money, but they had this huge sect, and the Texas police, I don't know if it was Dallas police or who, got a phone call, or state police, they got a phone call from a 16-year-old girl who said she wanted out, that she'd been abused in the camp, sexually abused, and was going to be married off or had been married off. And they went in and raided the thing, and they took 416 children out of there, mostly girls. Now, what's interesting is that the mothers there somehow all managed to have girls, or maybe they had young girls, and those mothers were moved in there. And I don't know how you get in there as a guy, but these guys were marrying 5 and 6 women, and marrying these very young 50-year-old guys, marrying 14, 16, 18-year-old girls, apparently. Well, the jig is up there. And they put an end to that, although there's still some trauma to go through, because these little girls, age 1 to 16, who have led very sheltered lives, have suddenly been ripped away from the compound, the home they know. Their mothers, for the most part, have gone with them, but they're under protective custody right now. And, of course, they see the state of Texas as the bad guy here, not necessarily the men who are exploiting them. And many of the women, the mothers of these girls, believe in polygamy as a natural way of doing things. Hey, I'd like to tell you I believe in it too, because it'd be it might be fun, but I don't know that I could handle more than one wife. I found I really couldn't handle one, so I'm not sure I'm in favor of polygamy. But some people think it's for them. So it's worth mentioning another couple of things that are going on, and these are in the world of sports. But I think we will take a break first, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit of sports.